Coming up, now the story of a wealthy podcast who lost everything in the one episode that had no choice but to bring it back together. I've made a huge mistake. It's Most Extreme Podcast. Let's do it.
Welcome to Most Extreme Podcast, the show where we discuss and analyze the...
I'm so sorry. I burped. All right, keep going. I'm sorry. I shouldn't drink seltzer before the show, and then that's what happens.
No, the enigma.
Keep going.
The enigma that is Fox Network scheduling decisions and the shows that they decide to cancel that everybody loves.
Have you seen that Family Guy bit where Peter goes over? It's like, what? We have to make room for amazing Fox shows, and then just lists all the shows that have ever been canceled by Fox for its last of the season. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. Oh, I'm Brett. Hi.
Oh, and I'm Jared Whitworth. I don't even think I said my name either.
No, we didn't, but that's, you know, it's fine. How are you, Jared? Are you doing okay?
I'm doing well. Should I not be? Why do you ask?
No, I'm just trying to be nice.
What did you do to my soup?
Why are you trying to get me out of the house? Well, I've been watching the amount of quotes that are happening from this week's topic, which I guess we should say Arrested Development.
This could be an hour and a half of just quotes. And I'm really tempted to just make it. And you know,
and I mean, it's going to be hard just to even do an hour or more on the show because it could be its own podcast, you know?
Yeah. But here to help us out is a good friend, Luke Brown. Another one, I know I gave former guest Emily Robinson a lot of credit for being one of our most devoted listeners. Luke Brown always will either send me a relevant meme or make some comment about that week's episode. So, pleasure to have you on the show, Luke.
Yeah, man, appreciate y'all having me.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming. I'll probably not be listening to this one. listening to my own voice is excruciating, so... Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. It wasn't just because it's going to tank already.
No. Yeah. Lowest ratings ever.
Yeah. We had to cancel the podcast.
Well, we've been saying that since day one, since Silly Bands. So, since someone's been listening to the show. But, Luke, we're excited to have you on, especially to be talking Arrested Development. This is a topic that you brought up to us. I guess, should we get into it? Yeah, so as you a big fan of the show, where did it begin? How did you get into the show? Where did your love for Arrested Development start?
Yeah, so I definitely didn't watch it as it was during its original run. It was like mid-2000s, 03 to 06, I think. So, I mean, I was probably like middle school, early high school then, so I was probably too dumb at that point to appreciate the humor, so definitely didn't listen to it at that point. But I think... I first heard about it when I was in college. I started in college in 2010. So there were a bunch of like end of the decade lists about like the best shows of the 2000s or whatever. So I think that's how I first heard about it. So I first watched it, you know, when I was a freshman in college, and then just kept watching it over and over again, quoting it constantly and things like that. So that's where it all started for me.
Awesome. Jarrett, what about you?
Yeah, so it was the summer before junior year of high school. So this had been like summer 2009, I guess. And yeah, so it had been a few years since it was on originally, right? So I came in afterwards like so many people did. And I had only ever heard my brother mention it before. But Hulu was just a website. You just go and they just had a bunch of stuff. And one of the things they had on it was Arrested Development. And so I just remember thinking, like, I've heard my brother mention this before, and I don't want to read Uncle Tom's Cabin. So I started watching Arrested Development, and for it to be only, like, it was three seasons, 22-minute episodes, and they all got shorter, right? So it was only, like, there was, like, 50-some episodes in, like, that original run, and you just plow through. And it like, really – I watched it so fast. Yeah, that's how it happened for me. And I've, like, countlessly rewatched it. Because it was just so short, like you, it did not take much time to watch it. But yeah, just you watch it. There are jokes I got like the fifth time I watched it, you know, and it just keep coming up.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's similar for me because I definitely remember that era of Hulu where Hulu was shows that have been on or are going on and then you could watch it the next day. Or sometimes they would have something like Arrested Development, which is sort of how I watched the show. And I only watched like a couple of episodes. But it wasn't really until college where it had the fourth season had been put onto Netflix and it became a Netflix original, which we'll get into. But yeah, it definitely got into that, and then it shared it with my friends, shared it, and it was definitely in freshman year when you really aren't studying, you don't have that many classes, and you're like, oh, I'm late for communications 101. So you don't have much to be studying for in the first place unless you're like a nursing student. But yeah, so I just watched a lot of TV, and Arrested Development was one of my favorites, and it still is to this day, especially while we rewatching it for this. I haven't rewatched it a bunch, but then in preparation for this, really enjoyed rewatching it.
Yeah, I hadn't watched it as much since college, but I rewatched the original run recently, and yeah, it's just a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I rewatched a couple clips and just started dying laughing. And Michael's trying to get Job to spend time with his son Steve Holt, and then George Michael's like, "Wait, Steve Holt, that like meathead jock?"
Yeah,
Job's like, "That's my son, you pothead."
Yeah. So that's, I mean, if we're doing quotes, one of my absolute favorite quotes from the entire show is when Job is coming to grips with the fact that Steve Holt is his son.
Mm-hmm. This is, spoilers.
Yeah, sorry. it's been on.
Well, this isn't the episode for you if you've never seen it. Yeah.
But anyway, he says, Job and Michael have this exchange, and it's like, what is this feeling? Well, you know, this feeling that you're feeling, this is just what many of us call a feeling. But it's not like envy or even hungry. Could it be love? I know what an erection feels like, Michael. No, it's the opposite. It's like my heart is getting hard. One of my absolute favorites.
For those who don't know, Luke did this without looking at any notes.
Yeah.
All he did it contact. Verbatim.
But I mean, I quoted that internally so much. Like there's a lot from the show that, like, you know, most of my friends haven't watched it, so if I quote it, they'll just be like, what? You know, so I just quote it like internally. So that's definitely one. Whenever I have a feeling, that's, you know, every now and then that happens. And
you don't say it like in line at like Jersey Mike's. No, no. And they're like, what the heck?
But yeah, that's so I quote a lot in turn. I actually quoted one out loud a few weeks ago. I was playing Ultimate Frisbee, and there's, I don't know if you remember the scene, but when Tobias does the school play or whatever, he gets roasted by the school, you know, some sophomore, school news writer, and he's like, oh, I don't care what she says, and then it cuts to him and crying in the shower saying, why Tracy? Whenever somebody does something I don't like, I'll say, why Tracy?
Why Tracy?
I was playing Ultimate Frisbee and somebody threw like a bad pass, and I said, why Tracy? And the guy next to me said, who's Tracy? And yeah, that's, you know, it's a thing, it's normal.
Yeah, and that's a deep cut too.
Yeah,
and it's one of those things with like if they get it, then you're like, "Yo, we need to be friends."
But that's what I love about the show. I mean, it's not. I mean, I love the iconic quotes and all that too. But really, it's just like the little, like the quick little jokes that if you're not paying attention, you'll miss them. I mean, it's all throughout the show, and that's what sets the rest of the development apart to me. And that's really what I love about the show.
Yeah, there's at some point Job says something like totally. Like he's trying to make it sound profound, but it's like a really like Job style thing to say. And then Michael looks at him and trying to like make it sound like biblical. And Michael looks at him and says like, I don't know if that one made it off the mountain, Job. I say that all the time. I don't know if that one made it off the mountain.
Yeah. It's interesting going into sort of a lot of what made this special, because I was looking at a quote by Alan Sepinwall, who's the Rolling Stone chief TV critic over there. And he called it that in a show that is an incredible Rube Goldberg contraption of a sitcom. A lot of like what you were saying, Luke, of sort of like all these like inner piecing kind of jokes that you wouldn't notice if you're not watching carefully. But honestly, I just can't think of a sitcom in recent years that has come close to the, like, the shows of this era. Like, I don't know any current sitcoms that anyone's watching, because it seems like this era of the 2000s, like The Office and 30 Rock, which we'll get into for sure, is like, that was like maybe the last era of like, oh yeah, there's like a bunch of sitcoms on and they're all good.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, what are there sitcoms on TV anymore? Or just people rewatching The Office for the 20th time?
Yeah. What is the like NBC 2 hour block like on, you know, Thursday or whatever? Like, you know, I don't know. Right. I couldn't tell you any shows that are on.
Yeah. Right. Nobody.
And is streaming changed it?
Nobody watches like, you know, the main channels anymore. Cause we don't, yeah. Nobody in our generation has cable. So, or we just don't do the, you know, watching CBS or ABC like people used to.
And you got Pete. That's and why you got also, Peacock and Paramount Plus and Quibi. You know,
all the top three, for sure.
The big three.
Especially Quibi.
Yeah.
But that's so weird because it's like, are people even making sitcoms? Is my thing, because that's like, I guess the only ones I can think of are like Ted Lasso and Mythic Quest, both on Apple TV Plus. But do you know how many people have Apple TV Plus? Like maybe 5. So.
Oh, I hear Ted Lasso is really good.
It's really good, but it's only in like a niche market of people who actually have Apple TV Plus. Yes. Which is like, if this is on Netflix, it would be booming.
Yes, I do. I watched it through Apple TV or whatever it's called. That's how I watched it. Wink.
Yeah.
that's a thing, quote from the show. Did you
see? Wink? Yeah.
but also, I mean, I think just comedy nowadays is such a minefield. It's like, I mean, even going back and rewatching through the show, I was like, oh, they wouldn't be able to make that joke, this joke, that joke, wouldn't be able to make any of this. But I mean, that's just the way comedy is. I mean, comedy just operates on like the edge between what's acceptable and not acceptable. And, you know, that's always moving. So you look at one from 10, 15 years ago, it's, you know, the line's moved since then. So.
Right. There's definitely parts where I've been watching this show and I was like, this is real racy.
Yeah. Do we think the whole Mr. F storyline would
have? No way. That's what I was thinking of. Or like, you know, the little Easter egg joke where, you know, she's sitting on the park bench and the way she's sitting, you know, the letters say we brain. Like, there's no way that would fly. Yeah. I mean, none of that storyline would fly, but.
That whole situation was just misguided.
But also, I mean, a lot of the more racy kind of like very, I guess we would call taboo humor now, was done to basically just show how stupid the Bluth family is.
Yeah.
And that they're just completely oblivious to the fact that they're being extremely offensive to everybody, even though it was still considered offensive today when you know, when Lucille says, a sea of waiters and nobody can take my order or something like that.
But I think ultimately, like, the show, like you're saying, like the joke is always on the characters. Like it's not whatever, you know, whatever joke they're making. It's not making fun of that group. It's the joke is on Job or Lucille or whatever. I mean, because they're ignorant or stupid. I mean, it's always on them.
Right. Especially a show that was just, it was, the funny thing is, I will get into it, but for like the show, a sitcom that was just winning all these Emmys and Golden Globes and yet audiences weren't even watching it. It's like, I don't even know of a show like that was a sitcom that is now as big as it is, that when it originally aired, it was so critically received and the audiences didn't like it.
Please tell your friends about this show. But yeah, I mean, I think that's you know, the American, you know, viewing audience just rewards terrible comedy and just doesn't reward good comedy. I think that's what it boils down to.
We've barely got into it, but definitely the sad part about doing a 2000s pop culture podcast is that a lot of the pop culture from this time was complete garbage. This is definitely, we talked about it last week, but definitely like the birth of like reality television, which is just like, it's cheap. And we have all these cable networks that need content. So let's just put a bunch of trash out. And then that's, honestly, I think for the worst for our society.
Yeah, like I was recently like listening to like a playlist of, you know, music from my high school years. And I'm like, this sucks. Like people have like nostalgia for that stuff. But like my high school, like, it was all terrible.
Wait, when did you graduate?
I graduated high school in 2010. Yes, but
oh, so 2009 2010 was maybe my favorite year of pop music.
But there was like this, all right, this is off topic, but there was like this stretch where music just hadn't adjusted to the fact that, you know, Napster and then iTunes and all that are just like the digital content. So it's, I don't know. That's off topic anyway.
No. Yeah. But now that, again, people don't, they found a way to pay for music now with Spotify and Apple TV. What am I saying? Apple Music. They need to change it from the Apple Watch. I miss it when everything had a lowercase I. It's a lot easier. Jarrett, you want to take it from here?
Yeah. Pull up the old notes here. So the development of Arrested Development. Ron Howard had the original idea to create a comedy series in the style of handheld cameras and reality television, but with an elaborate, highly comical script resulting from repeated rewritings and rehearsals. And then Howard met writer Mitchell Hurwitz, the creator of the show.
Who's great.
Yes. Yeah. Supposedly, and I think, Ron Howard was only supposed to be narrator on the pilot, and it just kind of went from there. He was like, he's so
right.
Good.
Yeah, he's so good.
That's another thing that makes this show so unique is Ron Howard just doing the narration for all of it. And that gives it this definitely like quirky, very indie. It feels like a Wes Anderson film kind of vibe. But then as the show continues on with like seasons 2 and 3, where he seems to like commenting more on stuff like, hey, that's the name of this show, or like, no, not him. Things like that, which give it even more of an edge, I guess you could
say. And I'm sure we'll be getting to talk about like the last two seasons, but I think that is a very real thing of like, it probably became too narrator dependent. In the last two seasons, he's basically just explaining everything that's happening. And it's not as much a guide as it is just, he's like, you probably didn't get this, so let me like run it down for you. It's like a little much, mm-hmm. But particularly, yeah, I mean the original three seasons, like it's all pitch perfect. But Mitchell Hurwitz cameos in Community, is that what I'm saying?
Preston Coogler. I was watching it recently and I saw him. I was like, that's Mitch Hurwitz.
Yeah, he's Coogler.
Yep.
And then Community creator Dan Harmon cameos in the Netflix seasons of Arrested Development. So a little back and forth.
There's a part in Community, this has now become a Community podcast, where Dan Harmon was just trying to put other creators of other shows in his show. So like Vince Gillian shows up at one point, the creator of Breaking Bad. And then, Mitch Hurwitz shows up as Coogler. So it's, definitely a funny trend that they were trying to do. And then Dan Harmon, shows up in Arrested Development. Very, very small part. But just thought it'd be kind of cool that they were all putting each other in each other's shows.
I was watching, I mean, I had like the DVDs because that's just how I did it back then, I guess.
But, yeah.
And I was watching one of like their commentaries because like the whole cast was on one of the episodes, like the commentaries. And he's like, yeah, I'm Mitch Hurwitz. I'm one of the writers on the show. And they all gave him a hard time. Like, he's like, one of the writers, the evil genius.
One of the writers. But so in light of, around this time, a lot of recent corporate accounting scandals, you had like Enron and Adelphia, but Hurwitz suggested a story of this kind of riches to rags family, and Howard was really interested in that, signed Hurwitz to write the show. There was a bidding war for the show between Fox and NBC, ultimately getting sold to Fox, which is hilarious that there was a Fox outbid someone else for it and then canceled it. Over the next few months, Hurwitz developed the characters and plot for the series. The script of the pilot episode was submitted in January 2003, filmed in March 2003, and submitted in late April to Fox, added to the fall schedule that May. So that feels pretty fast. That feels like that really got fast-tracked.
That is really fast, especially for the writing to filming process and, all the casting and everything too. I can't wait for us to do our Enron episode. That's going to be,
going to be big.
What a fun one. Yeah.
But we were kind of talking about this earlier, touching on, but Fox didn't know how to properly market the show, since it was so different from any sitcom. And they make references to that. Like, I think
when
Lindsay starts to be like, a quote unquote more like normal housewife and she's making hot ham water and stuff there. And then they talk about like, oh yeah, that's relatable. Like we're more relatable now. But there's a clip of, and I have seen, oh man, I remember watching this YouTube video. There's this clip of David Cross, who plays Tobias, and he's like dressed up. It's a clearly like sort of behind the scenes thing. And he's in his Mrs. Featherbottom, half dressed in Mrs. Featherbottom outfit. And he's like angrily ranting about the network and how it was like, how do you have this show that's won a million Emmys and like all this stuff, and you can't market it properly? Like, how is that even the case?
Right. I don't think it's our fault. I think it must be the network.
Yeah, it's clearly not the show. It's definitely. And they kept putting it up against like, yeah, you have this point here. So like they put it up against like the opening night of the Winter Olympics and stuff. They just like kept cross promoting counter programming with like things that it was obviously going to lose to, whether they knew it or not.
Well, they put the last four episodes of season three during the same night. So like the series finale was the same night as the Winter Olympics opening ceremony.
Let's just get rid of this. Like,
they really didn't care. And they just put four episodes back to back. So it's definitely like, oh, we do not care about this at all.
And the other thing is that around this time you had DVR and TiVo. And so you didn't know how to like properly account for like what was the actual real number of who was watching it. Because you had so many people not watching that night, but watching it later, recording it. So many of the shows from the 2000s, like kind of lived and died by the Nielsen ratings, which quickly became outdated because, we have such a shift. And you think even from then to now, I mean, there's been such a shift in how people consume TV. Nowadays, like the only reliable thing is live sports. And that's why everyone's trying to get all this live sports content. Numbers for everything.
It's the only one that's pretty much still doing the Nielsen ratings, which is the most outdated. Like, you get out a book and then you like click on what shows you liked, and it's already inaccurate already. Back in the day, but now the funny thing is that since everything is on streaming, it should be so easy to figure out what people are watching, and like you'd be able to have all the data right there. And yet, none of the services are sharing any of their data, so literally nobody knows, except for like. A few analytic people, what people are actually watching.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they can decide what to make more of and stuff like that. Like Netflix decides what shows they greenlit depending on the algorithm of like what shows are more popular, but nobody knows what shows are more popular. So nobody except for them can know, which is like, okay, well, I guess every show was a hit.
But then you keep seeing those rom-coms popping up with the same three actors. So you're like, okay, I guess people like these.
Are we on
gonna crank them out?
The Kissing Booth, like part seven at this point.
To all the boys I have yet to love. but the last point here, I remember in noticing one of the times I rewatched it, like in college, I guess, and seeing like Russo brothers or whatever, whoever Russo, and I was like, that's the same people that did like Avengers. So I was like, holy cow. No wonder all this is so good.
And they also,
Patty Jenkins.
They also did one of my favorite episodes of another show called Happy Endings, which is sort of similar.
Yes.
I don't know if y'all
watched. I love Happy.
Yeah.
So it's sort of similar. Like it was very, very acclaimed and things like that. It had three seasons, got canceled. Yeah. Similar trajectory.
And then they did a lot of Community. Which is why so many Community people have like small cameos and all the Marvel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Patty Jenkins, who directed Arrested Development 2, she is the director of the Wonder Woman movies. Mm-hmm. So
it's pipeline, man.
Yeah. It's just so weird because I've seen videos of like Russo brothers, like basically doing commentary and telling them like how they do their movies. And like when they were doing Infinity War, they were showing how they did a scene comedically. And they're like, yeah, we literally just did what we did on Arrested Development, but just did it with like, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy. We're like just shot it the same way and everything like that. I'm like, oh, all right. So I guess you're just using whatever tools you learned and then just using it for like the biggest movies of all time.
Yeah. Arrested Development and the highest grossing movie of all time.
Which is why you see like the Bluth stair car in like Civil War. So things like that. They like to throw a lot of their, or Tobias in the Collector's,
Blue Tobias
Chamber. Yeah. Tobias is my favorite character on the whole show. I should go ahead and say that because I think David Cross does maybe the best job of anybody on the whole show in terms of like, my whole bit is, so I watched a whole thing. I can just get into this, Jared.
Sure, but, yeah.
It's because he was originally supposed to read for both Buster and Job, which I cannot see him playing either of those people. It would just not work. And also Tobias was never intended to be a series regular. But they just liked him so much and he got the character that they put him in. And the same goes for Jeffrey Tambor. And sort of the idea of, you know, George Sr. But yeah, I was watching this interview with David Cross, who I think is great and super smart when he comes to like figuring out a character. But he was talking about how he figured out Tobias and he explained it to the producers as this erudite turtleneck wearing Upper West Side New Yorker Dick Cavett mixed with like that West Coast North Californian touchy feely sort of hippie new agey guy. And that together creates Tobias. And it's like the most perfect example of like explaining exactly what that character needs to be. Basically, he just needs to be somebody from Chapel Hill.
Yeah, I think for me, it's Job. I just all my favorite lines are Job's lines. But also, I mean, he's just this really interesting mix of like arrogant, cocky, but also insecure. I mean, that makes his character just very interesting, and just his lines are just awesome. There's one of my favorite lines from season four is Anne is saying, you're not supposed to see me before the wedding or whatever. He's like, well, hopefully I haven't. He's like, he doesn't like what she's wearing or whatever. But yeah, but he just has all his lines are some of the best to me.
Yeah, I have to say Job is probably my favorite as well.
But I mean, all the actors, I think that's another thing that sets show apart. I mean, they didn't just get comedians, they got actors. I mean, David Cross is a comedian, but he's also a great actor. But, I mean, all the actors just kill it. Jason Bateman, I mean, he's one of my favorite comedic actors. He's just, he's so great. He's a straight man. His delivery is just, is fantastic. I think that's another thing. Like, one of the reasons I have a really hard time enjoying Seinfeld is because Jerry is just, like, the worst actor of all time. Like, I can't watch it.
Right. He's smiling in every shot. Yeah.
But, I mean, all these actors, they just kill their roles. You know, they find their niche and just, they just... they're awesome.
Am I continuing on with the cast or?
Yeah, why not?
Well, did you have something else to say before?
No, I was just going to say that I think that Jason Bateman is really good at just being the stock protagonist. Mm-hmm. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah. And it's like, you root for him out of all you're like on his side and kind of, you know, very sympathetic to his plight of just dealing with this family of super out of touch. It's just one banana, Michael. How much could it cost? $10. You know.
But he's not even,
when Jessica Walters died, I definitely rewatched a bunch of it.
He's not even like, it's not like he's that great. It's just by comparison. He's just like a relatively normal person. So you root for him just by comparison of how terrible and, you know, lazy and everything else all these other family members are.
And Jason Bateman has so much experience of already being on sitcoms, and he's been, you know, he's a child actor and went through the whole system of Hollywood. So that definitely works for that character of being somebody who's like, I've dealt with all this craziness ahead of time, that it's, you know, almost coming from a real life story. Personally, I feel like I don't like Michael as much in the Netflix seasons, mainly just because his normality of the stock protagonist kind of dies away.
I think that's deliberate though. I mean, since he's not around the other family members, like he liked being around them in the earlier seasons so he could feel better about himself. You know, he could feel superior when he's not around them anymore. That's stripped from him. He's not, you realize that he's just, you know, he's flawed in the same way they are.
I was just thinking about in the fourth season when he's hanging out with George Michael and his roommate, and he's talking about how he had the article in the in-flight magazine, and P-Hound's like, I mean, that's fine. And then like Michael seems really offended. He's like, you ever even been on a plane, you piece of shit?
One of my favorite lines from season four, that one's, because it's very much in keeping with the first three seasons. Like, it's right, it's very quick, and it's that's a killer line.
Oh, all right, anyway. We're just gonna pepper it in favorite lines through this whole thing. But yeah, so you haven't.
Oh, that's gonna happen for
Michael. Yeah,
he's not just a straight man. He's also, I mean, his character is really funny too. Like, I mean, he just points out their absurdity, but in a way that's also funny, not just like, "Aha, I'm better than you." Like, another one of my favorite lines is when, you know, he's trying to rescue George Michael from Mother Boy. You know.
Oh, right.
Buster's saying, you know, we need to come up with a name for this operation. It's called Operation Hot Mother. And then Michael says, yeah, let's try to top that.
I think a lot of it is just that the character of Michael is just like, I don't want to be involved with any of this craziness, but I think I have no choice. That's what Jason Bateman once described the show as, the Royal Tenenbaums, but shot like cops, which is his way of describing the show. And you know what? It kind of works.
And when he's trying to point out all the ways that Tobias like speaks, he's like, you know what you do? You get a recorder, you record yourself for a day and you just listen to it again. Maybe you'll get a sense of what people are talking about.
So many poorly chosen words in that sense.
Yeah.
That's definitely a frequently maimed line.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, continuing on through. So you have Buster Bluth, played by Tony Hale, who does an incredible job. And I have to confess, the first time I watched it, it took a few episodes for me to like understand what Buster was.
Really?
Yeah. I was just like, what is this? And then I was like, okay, this is a hilarious character.
Bringing up Buster is one of my favorite episodes. That's one of the best. I mean, with his, you know, long expletive, rants, like there's two of them in the episode, but also they just like, they do some different things with the camera, like George Senior's talking about how, you know, he was too burnt out on raising the older kids to care about Buster, and then it pans out and you see Buster sitting right there, like, so
right,
that is, you know, there's not many Buster centric episodes, and that is one of them. It's one of the best for sure. That's another one I quote a lot, when he says he flew too close to the sun. I quote that a lot when I like mess up or something like that.
Or
let
that
him
he
go in the sun.
Or that he was able to be in the school that was so good. Like, your children should be neither seen nor heard. Milford. And he was so good at it that nobody knew he graduated.
Yeah.
You always know a Milford man.
It's all very classic, like, screwball comedy tropes that you would see in like a lot of like Can't Take It With You or like that kind of old stuff, which I literally like, so it's cool seeing it kind of come back to shows like this.
So shout out to Drew Robinson. Another line that we use all the time around him, if he ever like has a day off or like something, we say like, oh, did Army have half a day?
Did nothing cancel?
Oh my gosh. But yeah, Buster's great. Job, when Will Arnett auditioned, he played the character, quote, like a guy who thought of himself as the chosen son, even though it was obvious to everyone else that he was the least favorite. And he was chosen immediately for his unique portrayal. All those times where he's like, well, I could be president if anybody would ask me. And like, do you want to be president? He's like, well, no.
A waiter. Oh, excuse me, madam. And then becomes like a fantastic waiter.
He accidentally works for a day. Yeah. But also like when like he won't even like mailing one letter that Michael asked him to mail is like too much of a chore for him.
You mailed the insurance check, right, Joe?
Turning $100 into 1,000 pennies. Yeah.
Oh, you've only lost him $99 so far. that's one of my things.
Just the segue alone tells you everything you need to know about the character, that it has like his name written on the little like fanny pack on the front. It's like, oh, I know who this guy is.
And then, and stuff like, so it's G-O-B and his name is Job. And then he's talking, he's like that guy Job from the Bible. And like all this sort of like the wordplay in the humor there. But speaking of that penny trick, one of my favorite cold opens is when he's giving a presentation and he's like ready to get like showered with money, and they like accidentally go off before, and then he has one extra and like hits the guy in the glasses, and then Steve Holt comes in with the boombox. He's like, nah, I already.
Anytime I see a like a political attack ad, I just can't take it seriously, because all that's playing in my head is Steve Holt is a bastard. He doesn't even know who his real father is. What else don't we know about Steve Holt? So, like, I can't, anytime, I just can't take the political tech head seriously after that.
It's that for me, or it's Bobby Newport. Yeah. Bobby. And they keep going with Bobby over and over again.
Oh, my gosh.
And also,
Will Arnett beat out Rainn Wilson for the part of Joe Bluth. So that's, yeah. I cannot see Rainn Wilson doing that. I can see anybody but Will Arnett doing that role.
It's the same with anybody. I mean, it's weird if David Cross would have played him, like, right. He originally auditioned.
And Will Arnett couldn't have been Dwight. You know, it's like always.
Have you seen the Office auditions that are on YouTube? It's like, oh, I mean, it's much as it'd be cool to see, like, Bob Odenkirk play Michael or something. Like John Cho play Jim. But it's like, it doesn't work. It doesn't work without these people. It's the same when we did our Lost episode when it was like, oh, man, like, the person played Hurley almost played Sawyer. It's like, that would have been not right. Yeah. But I think this is Will Arnett's best role ever. That's my hot take. Oh, that and Lego Batman, I think, are the two where it's like, oh, nobody else could do it. Like, it's only Will Arnett.
Yeah.
I've seen, or I've heard him in a lot of, like, voiceovers and commercials these days.
Does the Reese's voice. Yeah.
But I've heard him in other stuff, too. I'm like, that's him. That's Joe.
Yeah. His role, it's a super small role in 30 Rock that he does, like, is great, but it's basically Job. It's like if Job were successful.
Right. That's my problem. It's like, and it shows into that. Or like in like Hot Rod, it's like, oh, that's Job.
Babe. Yeah.
Babe, no. Yeah, he's just playing the rich asshole. Yeah. Like, that's his thing, and he's so good at it, but it really only works when he, like, thinks he's great. Rather than like, oh, he actually has like the nice car. So
we're going to talk about Lindsay, and this is going to segue into what maybe my favorite line in the show. So Lindsay Bluth, she wants to be seen as the charitable one of the family. So she certainly starts off. There's a lot of montages about like her different organizations that she and Tobias are a part of. And so when it's the hoop. Is one of them, like, the anti-circumcision hands off our penises one. And she's explaining it to Michael, and Michael says, like, he says, sounds like you saved enough skin to make 10 new boys. Oh, my gosh. Well, that's one of my favorites. You can edit that out. But,
no, that's staying in.
That is one of my favorite ones.
To quote you, leave it in.
She's talking about one of the other ones. She says, don't you remember Neuterfest? And Michael goes, yeah, I remember your wedding.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. But, I mean, yeah, she certainly changes all throughout that. But, yeah.
But even, like, yeah, when she's, like, when the whole, like, arc of her and Tobias having an open marriage – and anytime she's like trying to get a guy to notice her, she just completely fails. Like, can I buy you a drink? And then they're like, no. And then she just leaves. And he's like, but I can buy you a drink. Where'd she go?
She's already gone.
Yeah, that's when she's trying to hit on all the guys at the office Christmas party. And he says, one of the guys says, this has been pleasant and professional. Good luck in the coming business year. Like, whenever I get hit on by a girl, like, I'm not interested. I'm like, that plays in my head. I don't say it out loud. I'm like, good luck in the coming business year.
This has been pleasant. And, we talked about Tobias already. But, yeah, every character really is just pitch perfect. And they're all written so well.
Who has the best chicken dance? That's the ultimate question.
Oh,
who's the best chicken dance? Ooh, good question.
For me, it's Lindsay.
I might have to go with, I was going to say Lucille.
For me, it's Lindsay. Yeah. Yes.
Lindsay has a great one, yeah. And it's also interesting that she was a character that got changed because of the actress. Like, Porta de Rossi, like, played her, and then they changed the character because of her to make it more, like, according to, like, what she was able to do. But yeah, and then, I mean, there's so many other, like, I think Lucille Bluth is just so perfectly casted as, like, the, like, obnoxiously rich, like, out-of-touch woman Here's some money, go see a Star Wars, things like that. Everything that she does is so perfect. Yeah. I don't really think George Sr. is as funny as Oscar, especially the whole arc of where anytime he like looks at Buster and then like that like happy, like dramatic music starts playing as if it's like, oh, maybe he does know his father. Oh my gosh. That is perfect.
And then as it goes on, everyone starts like rolling their eyes during it. You know, it becomes like a joke even within the show.
I think,
which is sort of,
George Sr., his like funniest moments are when he's like, you know, he's just having like a pathetic attempt to be deceptive. It's like, oh yeah. Or like, I don't know how to explain that, but it shows up in the show a lot. He's like, pretends to be offended when Michael calls him out by, you know, something he's lying about or whatever. That's where he's funny to me. But yeah, another one I quote a lot. I know I'm heavy on the quotes, but there's when Buster thinks that there was a ban on team sports because they wouldn't let him play soccer when he was a kid. He says, no, you were a turd out there. You couldn't run. You couldn't kick. You were just a turd. I quoted that to myself whenever I had like a bad day playing tennis or whatever.
Did you use it during your same ultimate frisbee game?
Ultimate too. Man, you were just a turd out there. He says it in like such a seemingly compassionate like tone of voice. Like you're just a turd.
And they're like, Luke keeps talking about this Terry. I don't even know. But the thing I think about it when I think about the show so much and I think about what makes it so unique and everything is that it figures out like something that we talk about so much through the show with Will Ferrell movies and SpongeBob and everything is like smart, dumb comedy, where this is a lot more witty in terms of it's the dumb being the characters, but it's just so clever. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it coming from how it was shot. It's very unique, especially because a lot of it was shot on location in like sunny California. With using HD video cameras, which were brand new at the time, doing multiple cameras, parroting that tactic of like a documentary film's crew and reality television, but straying from like the fixed set audio studio audience laugh track style, long dominant in the comedy production. So at the time, it was very different and new, where now we can look back on it and be like, well, things like The Office or something do more of the documentary style than this show, where this is a lot more like a reality television in terms of how they shot it.
Yeah, it was the first show I watched that didn't have, or first sitcom I watched that didn't have like a laugh track or whatever. I was like, this is way better. Like, why did they ever have laugh tracks? First time I watched.
Right.
And like you said, the multi-camera, like, it was the first time I'd seen that as well.
It was the first. I have a lot of friends who are like, I will not watch a show with a laugh track. Like, because it just takes like that pausing a lot of times, just making room so they can get the next commercial break, or they just feel like, you know, don't tell me when to laugh. I laugh when I need to. So it's very interesting. It depends on the show for me, especially when it like older shows. Sometimes it can add to that. It can make it funnier. I don't know. But the show uses heavy use of cutaway gags, supplementing the narrative with visual punchlines like security camera footage or Bluth family photos or like old, you know, videotape of when they were kids or, you know, website screenshots, flashbacks, everything that kind of just goes in together. And it might even be for like a second. So it might be like when they leave Anne in Mexico, be like, where's Anne? And it's just one shot of her like sitting on a bench. Her? Who's Anne?
Her? Another thing too, I don't love like swearing in general too much, but a bleeped out swear word is one of the funniest things in the world to me. And so the show, the way that one, if it's just bleeped or they're covering their mouth or they're turning or the camera moves or something, like the way that they bleep it out and censor that is nonstop funny to me. And the way that they get away with not censoring the F word when Job is doing his suits gang. So you, one scene starts with King $5,000 suit. And then like 20 minutes later, another shot ends with him going, you know, so they like just like splice it differently and stuff like that is hilarious to me too.
My favorite cutaway is the, going back to George Michael, his Star Wars video, like, because it's sort of like a running joke that they only have like one video tape that they, anytime they use a camera, it always gets spliced over that. And so that's one of my favorites. Like, it just keeps,
which is the same gag in a very similar show, It's Always Sunny, where when they do the commercial for like the shotgun shots, and like the commercial ends and it's just the last footage that they ever used on that camera. Similar in that it's a show about terrible people who never learn, and that it's shot with like a one single with no laugh track kind of thing. Very different, because it's like you're dealing with idiots who are rich and then idiots who are broke.
I was thinking about that when I was thinking about doing this podcast. I was thinking about comparing those two, and it's just so much easier to binge Arrested Development because like it just has this like fun, lighthearted tone, whereas you know, It's Always Sunny is so dark, so it's hard for me to watch as many in a row of It's Always Sunny. The rest of the time, you can just keep going. It's just so lighthearted.
Yeah. Right. But even then, to that point, I have a lot of friends who don't like watching Arrested Development because they don't like any of the characters. And this is sort of a bigger thing about a lot of people in general in terms of trends of like comedy. It's like, I don't like watching Arrested Development because when I want to watch a TV show that I want to binge, I want it to feel like family or like friends or something that I can go into. And I don't get that out of Arrested Development, but I can get it out of something like Parks and Rec or like The Big Bang Theory or something like that. And to that, I go, that's not the point of comedy, though. Like, if you're watching comedy, you're watching it to laugh, and that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, a comedy where everybody's nice and is friends is bad, in my opinion. Like, it's so weird that The Office is that show, because if you go back and watch it, like, it is cringy, especially the earlier seasons, that this is definitely, and then as it goes along, and it's definitely when Michael leaves, it's definitely a lot more of that, like, happy kind of show. But I don't think that's, like, if you're doing that for the sake of, that's not good comedy. Like, that needs to be the first goal in terms of a show for me.
Ultimately, just flawed people are more fun to watch than, you know, people who are not flawed. Right. It's why, like, whenever you see the, like, just the typical trope of, like, the dumb husband and, like, the infallible wife, it's like, that's just not interesting, because you end up liking the husband more because he's flawed. Like, whereas the wife is just, by juxtaposition, she's just infallible, so she's not interesting.
Right.
In Arrested Development, they're all flawed. Even Michael, like he constantly screws up opportunities to improve his life or leave, you know, for a better situation. So they're all flawed. They all make mistakes, and that just makes them more interesting. Keeps it, the humor level high.
And Luke, I remember you making this point a while ago, like years ago, about just like, it's funny and it just stays funny versus having like comedies that get sentimental and like try to do like love stories too, aren't as interesting to you.
That is ultimately, that's what I love the most about this show. Like it's like, I hate sentimentality in comedy. Like talking about The Office, like Jim and Pam, whenever that's going on, I'm just like, all right, let's move on. I want to laugh again. This is not funny. I don't mind.
Well,
I mean, there are some sentimental moments in Arrested Development, but it's always serving the humor, or it's always undercut very quickly to, you know, to go back to being funny. Like,
there's a point.
Go ahead.
Don't go ahead.
Like, for example, when George Michael and maybe when they make out, like in the second season or whatever, you know, immediately the Joe comes in and says, "Dad's going to be crushed." And then George Michael says, you know, he doesn't have to find out about it. So it's just like things like that. There are some brief moments of sentimentality, but they immediately go back to serving the comedy.
Yeah. Well, there's a moment like that, and I've heard this argument made with The Office, which is that The Office, like, if you want, like, a good ending, like, because basically it's the end of season 3 – where it's like, hey, you want to go out? And then Pam and Jim go out. And their story kind of ends right there. And then the ending being that Ryan gets the job. And then you could pretty much end the show there. And then because after that, like, the fun part of watching The Office was the will they, won't they, for the people who care about the romantic stuff of them. But then after that, it's like their story is kind of boring. And and for the rest of the show, it's like, oh, well, this isn't as interesting anymore.
That trope is one of my least favorite tropes in any medium, book, movie, TV, whatever. I'm just like, anytime.
And the sitcom is the most vulnerable of that.
I just feel like, TV. Are you like out of ideas for humor? Like, than just in the show. Like, I don't, I mean, when I'm watching a comedy, like, I don't want to feel anything. I don't want to learn a lesson. You know, I just want to laugh for 22 minutes
which,
or whatever.
Which really makes me, like, if you can get past Jerry Seinfeld's acting, like, that's all Seinfeld is about.
Yeah.
He makes a point, like, I only cared about what was funny.
Yeah.
So people would say, like, you, executives would be like, you know, you and Elaine maybe should get together. He's just like, nope, that's not funny. Like, we're not going to do
it. They do it in one episode. They get back together and they're like, yeah, we're sleeping together. And then they immediately go, this is a terrible idea. And that's really just to make fun of the studio.
I think Arrested Development is very in line with the tone of Seinfeld. It's just that, you know, all the actors are way better.
And that's a very valid point. Yeah.
I mean, I the thing that makes me think of this more,
we're all better
that,
than Jerry.
Yeah, the impact that this show has is really that the change of the 2000s from going from like the fixed sex live audience laugh track stage sitcom to the single format changes. That's where we get things like The Office. We get 30 Rock. We get Community, which Community is very much based off of Arrested Development. They should have a ton of similarities, not even just the directing staff of the Russo brothers, but even just a lot of the, you know, the creators working together. But even that, like Scrubs, like all these shows that like kind of the 2000s was the switch from the Seinfeld, Cheers, Frasier era of like, oh, a sitcom is basically a play that's shot with different cameras. And then, I mean, I'm just naming some heavy hitters, but I would argue that they do more with that format of the single camera than the sitcoms of this era, like How I Met Your Mother and Big Bang Theory.
I haven't watched those, so I can't comment.
Yeah, Luke, you would hate How I Met Your Mother.
For some reason, given the last couple minutes. I hate CBS shows. Like, I can't watch anything that CBS made.
Well, time for this week's sponsor, Paramount Plus. Get Paramount Plus on us. Just use, Jarrett, what's your credit card number?
One.
One.
I got the first one.
I got the first credit card. I was reading this article about it, but because of like how Arrested Development was part of that change from no laugh track, single camera footage, is that the result is now sitcoms have that expectation of rather than the predominant trend of like, we no longer have time to pause for laughter. It's just going to be joke after joke after joke. So I'm thinking of shows like New Girl or like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, or like The Good Place. I guess those would be sitcoms that are like we were talking about earlier. But now that's become the trend that Arrested Development started.
Yeah, I mean, I think like the happy endings is in that same category, like just very quick, you know, one joke to the next. Whereas maybe like the older sitcoms is more like bigger jokes that it takes longer for you to get to the punchline. Like the quicker style, definitely I prefer that style.
Well, to talk a little bit more about the humor, because we've been talking about so much about it, is that the running gag is the thing that is what makes Arrested Development so special. It's like that's the smartness of it, is a running gag, which might even be like in one episode. So, for example, the one where they build a house, where they set up the rock, paper, scissors game early, and then later it comes to example when they have the giant scissors in the rock, and then of course paper beats them all by being in the news. Or it can even be something in like a whole season can change things. So like the cornball machine that's set up early in season one comes back when they go to Mexico in season two.
It's, to me, running gags or something is really hard to make effective. And I think Arrested Development is so good at it. Whereas in some other shows, it just gets old. Like, I'm tired of this joke, but in Arrested Development, it's always like, especially like the Star Wars one, just always gets me for some reason. It may only play for like 2 seconds, but it just kills me every single time.
Yeah, I found this quote online, which is that Arrested Development developed a unique self-referentiality through the use of in-jokes that evolved over multiple episodes, which rewarded longtime viewership, which in turn maybe have discouraged new viewers and contributed to new shows' rating difficulties, which is an interesting theory, especially since this show, as we were talking about, we all started watching it when it was on streaming, where you could watch them over and you watch episodes over and over again. I can't imagine having seen this show like once a week. because it'd be like, right, that joke, you know.
But to that point, I think like you can be pretty sympathetic to someone who would try to come in at the third season, like, oh, I've heard good things about this show, and then you're just not going to get half of it because it is all self-referential and like so insular that like someone, you're not going to appreciate it even more so than just someone who like, even more so than a normal show that you hop in like halfway through, but like someone that has seen it all, and you're just going to get, they're going to get more out of it. Right.
Right. I mean, the whole show is cyclical. Like it's very much all in a series of just moving forward and over again.
And I don't know if this is stepping on something we'll talk about toward the end here, but like the fourth season that you think it was going to be, it was all on Netflix, right? So it was all going to be dropped at once. And so, you know, that they were trying to like with the weird filming of it and structure and like the timeline, how they set all up, they were almost like anticipating someone just taking 9 hours and watching it all at once. And then you're like able to keep track of kind of everything that was happening. And it was just odd. I mean, now they've got like the recut of it. So it sort of is, they edited it back to like sort of follow a normal flow. But kind of that initial attempt was leaning into the, like, people are going to stream this and watch it very quickly. So let's kind of monkey around more with the format of it all. And it was fine.
Yeah. Let's get into our thoughts. Thoughts about the Netflix era.
You go ahead, Luke.
Yeah. I mean, to me, like season four is, it was definitely rough on the first watch, but if you rewatch it, I think it works a lot better, which I mean, and then the remix or whatever, that also worked a lot better. And also they poked fun at the, you know, some of the, like the great obvious green screen. I don't know, the Ron Howard says, and even though he was clearly green at screening, well, I can't remember exactly what the quote is, but
yeah.
I mean, season four has some of my favorite quotes to me, some of my favorite lines. Like, I mean, like I said, hopefully you haven't seen, you know, you and what you're going to wear for the wedding or whatever, things like that. And like, I quote was it Tony Wonder? Same. Like, I quote same all the time. But to me, it just, like I said, first three seasons had like this fun, lighthearted tone. And to me, the last two seasons just didn't have that same lighthearted. It was more like, I don't know, like it was a little more angry to me or something like that. A little more like pointed, like trying to make a point with the comedy, like with the housing thing. Like, you know, they're buying this absurdly big house with all these things they don't need. Like, to me, that just, like, it was a little too pointed, like, relative to the first three seasons. It was not quite as lighthearted and fun as the first three. And season five, yeah, it's just not very good.
Yeah. And that's my whole take on it all was, like, you know, it's tragic that it wasn't promoted well enough and that it got canceled and that like it didn't have the following that it deserved. But then for 10 years you had, the only thing anybody wanted was more Arrested Development, and that is like, that's where you want to be, right? And so now like there are probably a lot of people that'd be like, wait, there was a fifth season too, you know, and no one wants any more Arrested Development now. So I think it's like,
yeah,
it's hard to not see the like, oh, people are obviously going to watch it if we make more because people have been wanting it for a decade. But like, isn't that in a way like where exactly you want to be?
Because it's weird because, and it was just dropped on Netflix season five. Season four was a huge deal because this is right around when Netflix was like, what, we're making new shows. And this was like one of the first things they brought like back from the dead.
Yeah.
And which they had done with like Black Mirror and a bunch of other shows. So it was like, what? They're bringing Megan back. That's huge. And then season five just kind of dropped regularly.
I remember being like surprised. I was like, oh, shoot. Let me watch this.
Which maybe is because they just didn't like it. But also, here's a quote I also found, which is that given the splintering of the TV landscape, the sheer number of familiar properties that are being adapted or rebooted, which we've talked about so many times on the show with like iCarly and the multitude of spinoffs of SpongeBob that are out now and everything, that the intense marketing that goes into turning streaming services fare into appointment viewing, the premiere of virtually any TV show from the 2018 era can't be the event that it was in 2013, the season four. But when even the shows that can unite a fractured viewership that are either scheduled to end soon with like the Game of Thrones or engaged in a seemingly irreversible decline, sort of like with The Walking Dead. There's more great TV ever than there is now, but the medium is of the warp speed that it's in has just changed it all. There's more to watch than ever before, and there's more that's worth watching. But unless a show makes a splash on social media and earns a vocal fandom, it's hard to see an impact of a new arrival. We basically will like, oh, it came out, and then we talk about it for a weekend, and then we never talk about it again.
Yeah, like Tiger King. I mean, that's probably the good example. Like, I mean, no, you know, it hit last year and that's all you heard about for 2 weeks, and then nobody's talked about it since.
Yeah, and I only just think that's like sort of where we are right now with the amount of streaming services and everything. It's just like we've joked about it on our show before of like quality over quantity doesn't exist anymore. It's just volume.
Yeah.
And to the point where sure, you have a better chance of getting your show made, but is anybody going to watch it? Well, we don't know because we don't have the analytics of like the ratings anymore. So the only thing that can, I guess in a way, word of mouth, also meaning social media, is like the only way you know if something's become huge or not.
Yeah, I mean, but Arrested Development, I mean, it does keep getting right. Even though, you know, people had the last two seasons weren't as good, people still, especially the first three seasons, I mean, they're always in social media with memes and yeah, things like that, GIFs. Like, I don't know what I expected. That's one I see all the time. Lucille Bluth, you know, rolling her eyes.
Tobias crying in the shower is a huge one.
Yes, I use that one all the time.
The sad walk.
Yeah, the sad walk.
That one's used a lot. Yeah.
But yeah, so it's
a lot of.
It does have staying power in ways that, you know, these other shows are not going to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the power of it, really, is that even though, like we've said before, it's got some racy stuff and some pretty inappropriate stuff that we would probably not be a fan of, it's pretty solid the first three seasons all around, and especially because it sort of has that like book ending end of the season three where, like, you know, the pilot starts on a boat and then ends on the boat, you know, like it's kind of just like the reveal of An Yong being behind everything is like, oh, that's perfect, you've got a 1, 2, 3 and you've got a book end and it's pretty much perfect.
They still have boats. Talking about the SEC.
What were we going to say, Jarrett?
I wasn't going to say anything. Like, just we'll then, I wasn't going to say anything. Or I was thinking a quote of, like, how they got An Yong in the first place. It's, maybe I'll get a son who will finish his cottage cheese.
Well, kind of wrapping up, it is. So I was an interview on the AV Club with Mitch Hurwitz was talking about the sort of the idea of ending every episode with like on the next Arrested Development, mm-hmm, and then just being scenes that never happened. That these were gags intended to convince potential advertisers that there was more to the series that was shot, and to entice viewers to come back the next week. Mitch Hurwitz said that one of the questions they asked at test audiences after that was, "Would you see this again?" And a great way to get those numbers high. People would be like, "Oh no, I have to. There's another one coming." So, I guess we need to start doing that with our show. So, on the next Most Extreme Podcast, we're gonna finally remove Jarrett's wart. That's happening next week.
Brutal.
Alejandro promised he's gonna do all of "It's the End of the World as We Know It" by REM.
What's y'all's favorite episode?
Of Arrested Development?
Yeah.
Or of the podcast.
They're all great.
Oh, that's a hard one. If you give me 5 minutes to look at, or not even that long.
I think for me, it's Afternoon Delight. Like, that's one that I just...
Classic. Yeah.
Peer pressure, obviously, that's another one. And Bringing Up Buster. I mean, those are just... I can just watch those basically anytime. And like, Jarrett knows I can watch them by myself and easily laugh. Like, I don't have to be watching somebody else to laugh. They always kill me.
It's hard because when you binge a show, it all kind of just flows together that you can't like specify, oh, what's that episode, because you watch so many in a row that it just kind of goes along together, which works for something like this show. It doesn't work for things like we just talked about Lost, where like the point of them being week by week was that you could like fill that time with like theorizing and getting your questions figured out.
I think Afternoon Delight is the only one that Jason Bateman directed. So, but it is.
I think that's right. Yeah.
But
I really like anything that involves a lot of the side characters. So I like Bob Blah Blah. I love Carl Weathers. I think he's probably my favorite of the side characters. The private detective Gene, he's pretty fantastic. Yeah, those are some of mine. And just seeing like a lot of the guest stars come in, which is interesting because it was so packed with guest stars, like Ben Stiller, Zach Braff, Henry Winkler, all these people show up, that even Jack Black is in the show. I don't know if you guys know this, but he has a non-speaking role and he's only briefly seen in the background one time. It's in the episode, season 3, episode 2, for British Eyes Only, where he's like briefly in the pub in the British part of the Orange County.
I feel like with most shows, like when they have a guest star, you're just like, oh, they're out of ideas. But with Rest Development, it just never feels like that. And also, like, they're kind of poking fun at the actors, like Andy Richter or like Carl Weathers. I mean, it's always just so well done.
You're at, like Jeff Garland shows up. Like Jeff Garland shows up when Maybe becomes a producer. Just so many show up as like a version of themselves and they're able to joke around with it. Or they play like a crazy character that just, you know, shows up. Like even Liza Minnelli, who shows up as Lucille.
Yeah.
Whenever I was doing my rewatch, I noticed a lot of like smaller other TV show actors that I didn't recognize before. Like Mike from Veep was in there. Phyllis from The Office was in there.
Yeah, Ed Helms shows up. Yep. Yeah.
His has a little bit bigger role, but Armie Hammer was in it. The election one. He's the one that calls him Stardork. And I was like, is that Armie Hammer? I had to go to IMDb. I was like, it was him.
Oh, man. Oh, I hope it wasn't. that, and then also all the Jeffrey Tambor stuff that's come out between seasons 4 and 5, which makes even season 5 like, this is not as interesting. Especially because people like Jessica Walters have kind of come out and talked about their experiences working with him being like a disaster. Which really sucks. What were you going to say, Jarrett?
I was going to say, I could think of a couple episodes that were good. I like Good Grief. I was reading that. That's one of those. And that's when I think a couple, when Ice the Bounty Hunter is a fun one. And he's like,
I'm not your friend.
I'm not your friend, boy. And they're at the party in the condo and Michael like walks into the kitchen and he like gets Job on the walkie talkie. Like he's on the move. He's on the move. And Job's like, just turn around to the kitchen. Watch 15 feet away
when they're on the way to Mexico. I think check out who's on that hog in the rearview mirror.
George Michael. 15 miles to Legoland.
Any last thoughts as we wrap up? Any final thoughts?
I mean something that always strikes me when I'm watching this is like how much of a theme incest is in the show. Like,
it's a good point.
I mean, it's just with the, you know, George Michael, maybe obviously, Michael and Lindsay there at the very end, or Job or whatever.
Buster just wanted Buster being obviously attracted to another Lucille.
Yeah.
Oh, that whole bit of like Lucille.
Yeah. But also, I mean, you know, in this scene where, or in the episode where Jason Bateman, you know, his actual sister.
Yeah.
You know, so that's sort of like an inside joke, incest joke, I guess.
Maybe I should have been getting the family rate. Oh my god!
Oh, that's another one of my favorite lines. When George Michael and maybe towards the end of season 3, they think, you know, they're not related, so they make out, and then and then Tobias shows them all like the graphic pictures. I was like, "Well, you two sure are related." And then and later on, Michael says, you know, George Michael tells Michael about his feelings for Mabee, and then he says, "You can't act on that, you know, you are blood relatives." I know, I've seen the blood.
Well, Luke, thank you for coming on our show. Thank you for making the time. You are a guest, so you do get a prize. If I can pull it up here in a second. I found a cup for you. You're probably going to like it. It is the state flag of California that says, "I'd rather be dead in California than alive in Arizona."
Nice. I appreciate it.
So this is definitely one of those, like, oh, they're going to have to know the reference in order to get this. So if someone's looking through your cabinet and they're like, why do you have this? Yeah. Then to be like, you don't clearly know Arrested Development.
Yeah, in college, I wore a shirt with the Blue Company logo on it. I always got tons of comments for that.
Nice. I got a Bluth banana shirt.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, that's another thing. Yeah, thank you. That's another thing that's interesting is because I thought that was just like a random thing of like, oh yeah, they would have a banana stand. Is that just for comedy? But then I've been to like Newport Beach and like parts of like Southern California, and there's like frozen banana stands everywhere. So I was like, oh, it's like a real thing.
Supposedly,
got it. I thought it was just for
Mitch Hurwitz, like he and his brother had like a cookie stand or something when they were like in high school or middle school or whatever. So that's that's kind of where the idea came from.
Awesome. Okay, well, if you like what you heard, what am I saying? When you like what you heard, follow us on Twitter and Instagram with the handle Most Extreme Pod. And if you have any questions, email us at mostextremepodcast@gmail.com, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.